At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I can't remember which one it was. There was an athlete, a baseball player, short, small baseball player.
That we talked about?
Yeah.
Stephen Kwan.
Yeah. I watched like half of that one and I was like, oh damn, this looks like legit.
Oh,
like, it looked very and sounded very.
Oh, good.
Very professional.
We did finally get this. I think that sounds
I'm not an
better,
expert
right?
though. Yeah. So you got to take that for what it's
no, been. No, keep
we'll take it.
Gushing.
Yeah, keep going. Just keep going.
Hi, I'm Jim. Welcome to the Unbound Performance Podcast, where we explore the world of sports and performance mindset training.
And I'm Caroline. Each week, we talk about the strategies, habits, and mental framework that help us to excel. Let's get into today's episode.
Hello, hello. We are honored, thrilled to have a guest with us today. Cal Riley,
who's a...
Oh, yeah. Camera's there.
Just don't look at yourself so much.
I'm not going to... Look at this camera.
Yeah,
Cal Riley is a veteran, an entrepreneur, business owner, coach, and now a burgeoning author. So we are here to talk about his experiences and what led him to ultimately write this book that'll be coming out in the fall. And welcome.
Thank you.
It's an honor, for real. Like, for real.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. Honored. Honored to be here.
Us too.
Yeah.
I got to know Cal when he was a student, student athlete at Cardinal Gibbons High School. So we've got a Cardinal Gibbons trio here.
Yeah.
Caroline played
wrestling,
volleyball
correct.
There. And yep. Cal wrestled.
25 years ago.
Oh, God. Don't say it. Don't say
nice.
It.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, they both still look young and vital. And I look washed up, but.
That's not true.
I'm hanging in there.
Put a filter
for,
on you.
Yeah, I know. Make me tan.
Turn you into a cat or something.
Yeah, something like that. Right.
I love those. Wow. I can't believe grown-ups
that's
do that.
That's how you know you've got kids, when you know about that function. The like random
yeah.
FaceTime masks. My kids are always doing that.
So my daughter does these things to my phone and I can't undo them.
Can't undo it?
That's yeah. Sweet. And the TV and yeah. But
awesome.
I won't make this about the amazing
love
things
kids.
That she can do with technology when she's six.
Highly skilled.
So I guess first I thought we could start with the how did you wind up in the military? If that's a good place, and then
yeah.
You can talk about that as much or as little as you like.
No, absolutely, man. Well, again, thank you guys for having me. I'm really, really grateful to be here today. Yeah, growing up, you know, as a kid, my dad owns a construction company, and one of his things was, hey, we've got the boys, me and my brother, we both have to work for him. Probably before high school, if I'm being honest, it was probably in middle school. And it was a couple
child
summers.
So
I can't remember how many it was. Yeah, I'm not sure how high quality the labor was. It was probably subpar child labor. So, I think we probably got the better end of that deal. But after doing that for a couple summers, then for me it was I think I'm going to be a lifeguard during the summer in high school and college, and then graduated college. And yeah, I'm pretty sure the last thing I wanted to do was join the construction company. So. Decided, well, I don't want to do all that stuff because I don't want to be, you know, outside and working that hard. And
where did you go to school?
Went to St. Joe's in Philly.
Gotcha. Yep.
Yeah.
What did you major in?
Economics.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I liked working for my dad so much that I decided to join the army. So that's how much I liked construction.
That's how he ended up in the army.
So I'd rather go and kick down doors in Iraq and Afghanistan than do any construction stuff.
Way more exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, just I guess not as hard maybe is what I was thinking. I don't know. I don't really know. You know, when you're young, you make interesting decisions and you look back on them like, that was interesting.
So you joined post-college. You didn't do like ROTC in high school or anything.
I joined after college. Yeah. Yeah. And then I joined and I actually really wanted to be a part of, I wanted to be in the 101st Airborne and I really wanted to be in 3rd Brigade because they had a brigade commander who was Colonel Steele at the time from Black Hawk Down. And right. So I wrote him a letter as a cadet before, you know, before I graduated. And I said, hey, you know, I really want to join and whatever. And sure enough, I got my orders, 3rd Brigade, in the infantry. And, yeah. And then I was in the army for almost 10 years, which was crazy. And that was 10 years ago. So got out, actually got to, you know, kind of jumping around a little bit, but got to Afghanistan, did about 10 years, got to Afghanistan on my last deployment. And my satellite phone rang and it was my wife. And she was like, guess what? I'm pregnant. And I was like, okay, cool.
Oh, wow.
I'll see you in 6 months.
Cool.
So I got back 6 months later and it was like, oh, wow. You know, it was kind of a decision time, right? Like, do I want this lifestyle? Do I want to continue this lifestyle where I'm traveling so much? Or is it time for something different? And for me, I think it was time. It's time to make a change. So decided to drop my packet, get out, got honorably discharged. I feel like most people stay in the army for either 2 or 3 years or 20 years.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm one of those weirdos that like, I guess I'm a slow learner.
Halfway.
Yeah. took me a couple extra years to be like, oh, okay, I think I'm good. But I didn't want to do the full 20. But yeah, so got out. And then, yeah, rejoined the construction company, got to work with my dad for a couple years. And, those were good years. We had a good time working together, and yeah.
I bet that's pretty powerful thing. How many times did you re-up?
Just once, I think. So as an officer, it's like you sign this is like 20 years ago. You sign like a contract for a certain amount of time. And then when I went from the infantry, I went to special operations. So you have to stay on for an additional service obligation, I think is what they called it. So I think that was 3 or 4 more years. And then it was like towards the end of that, I was like, all right. And it was funny because it's like right before I was about to hit my below zone for major, the board who picks the majors is like sending me emails like, hey, you know, you could make major if you sign back up. No, I'm good.
Mm. Like, trying to give you like a little enticement.
Yeah,
like, hey.
I think I'm okay.
Do you think mostly family motivated you to make that change, or was it just a culmination of things?
I think it was a lot of things. I think it was definitely partially family. I think at the time too, it was, I mean, 10 years is a long time to do one thing. And I think, you know, as an officer, you spend your time leading troops is very precious. And the longer that you stay in, the less of that you kind of get. So it was almost time for me to be a staff officer, which is like, I had a little taste of that and I did not love that, making a lot of PowerPoints and doing a lot of staff work, not, you know, leading the guys. Yeah. Not the cool stuff for sure. But it was interesting because when you said, you know, did your family influence you? I almost thought you meant to join. And my grandfather was a POW. He was in World War II.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was a tail gunner on some kind of plane. I'm not a big, like, into the detail kind of guy. I'm pretty, like, high level. But it was this bomber plane. He was a tail gunner on this plane. And he got shot down, got captured. Went to POW camp, escaped POW camp, got captured again, and escaped again.
Where was this happening?
This was in occupied France. Yeah. He was like, you talk about perseverance, right? Yeah. And grit. I mean, that guy, and then he came back and started like a big Irish Catholic family with like nine kids, and like now all of them have, you know, three or four kids, and yeah, started this huge family right when he came back. So
yeah, you referenced that on LinkedIn post a bit ago. Yeah. That was a heck of a post, heck of a story.
Yeah, unreal. Thank you. Yeah, he was a hard guy. He was not. Yeah,
On the front of, I guess, just the transitions, I guess we'll get more into the story, but A, what was your plan when you went and studied econ?
Mm-hmm.
And B, when you went and didn't go to a real job, you went in the army and then came back to work, you know, for the construction company. What was that transition like to not really had like an adult?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, yeah, but by no means is the army not a job, right? But is that sort of more like office type job where you have a...
No, absolutely. I think I had a really good teacher. I think one of the professors was just like, wow, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
And I love economics because it's not as into the minutiae as business, but it's also like how kind of things work.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of useful to know, oh, this is why that's happening. And like we always do, I don't know if this is my economic training, but we usually do pretty good when we buy and sell houses. We're like, whoa, let's wait. I'm very like time the market kind of a guy, less so on individual stocks. I don't do that at all anymore. I'm just like, I let the advisor do it. But so yeah, I don't really have a great story for the econ thing, but
I think that's one of those like you have a knack for it that just interests you.
So yeah, it was just kind of something different that I hadn't really been exposed to. But then when what was the next one?
Leaving the army and going back to like a job kind of deal.
I think that something that a lot of veterans go through that is a huge adjustment is this physical versus kind of financial security, right? So in the military, you have it's very egalitarian. Like everybody knows what everybody else makes. You're a captain, you're a lieutenant, you're a staff sergeant. Everybody knows this is you have jump pay and some language pay, and then that's pretty much it. And you don't, you know, as long as you can obviously just manage your finances, right? It's pretty, pretty cut and dry.
That's what it is.
Yeah. It's not like you don't have to figure out how to, it's not like running a business where like, oh, like I've got to make payroll or, well, we might not be getting paid for these next couple months to keep the business going. Right. Whereas the business is the opposite, right? The business you don't have, well, that in the military, you have the physical security aspect, right? So your financial security is fine. You know, that's always going to be there. The U.S. Army is never going to not pay you, right? Although they did have the budget, the, what's it called? The budget thing where they have the budget shortfall and they say, oh, we're not going to, and they were talking about that, about when I was in Afghanistan, about, oh, we might not be paying you guys. And it's like, well, it's not really going to affect us at all. I mean, we're here. It's not like you can.
Yeah.
There's nothing to buy. So, anyway, so
where your family's back at home, but you know.
And where you focus on in the military is the physical safety, right? And your guys to your left and your right, those are the guys who are going to take care of you, and you're going to take care of them and make sure that, you know, we all kind of come home together. Well, the civilian world, especially as an entrepreneur, is kind of the exact opposite, right? It's the physical security is there. We live in the safest and, you know, most free probably country like on the planet. So there's no like real physical concerns, but financially,
eat what you kill.
Yeah. You have to rely on the people to your left and to your right to make that happen. Yeah. Right. Cause if we're not all rowing in the same direction, if we don't have all have the same mindset, well, the business isn't going to be profitable. So that's a huge shift, I think, going
the
from
security.
That like, hey, 360-degree security, and we're, you know, getting really good at our battle drills, we're doing our combat jumps or whatever, to like, oh, how does a like budget work, or what's a P&L? You know, figuring all that stuff out is, it's a big shift. Yeah, at least for me it was.
Huge.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Takes real awareness to kind of navigate those dramatic changes. One, to even know what's going on and then be able to manage it. How did that play out?
Yeah, I think I don't know if this is a me thing or if this is just a human condition, but for me at least, awareness has come long after the thing has happened, right?
Interesting.
So it's like while I'm in it, it's almost like I'm like, what the heck is this? And I'm figuring it out, you know, for the military and for this and for being an entrepreneur, right? And for, frankly, like with what the book is about, is the book is my awareness now.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Always like, holy crap, the way that I'm seeing things through a totally different lens, right? And it's almost like we as human beings need that time between the event to analyze it and say, all right, how did I do that? What did I do? Or what was different about this experience than, you know, my other experience?
Interesting. So you go into the business world again with your dad, your company. That had to be like a massive adjustment, like in a learning curve. Talk about that some.
Yeah, it was a huge adjustment. And I kind of, when I joined the company, we had a great reputation for doing awesome work. And I think I've done the best that I could to really maintain that. I think we've done a pretty good job at keeping that reputation there. But I think something that I saw that we could do more of is going out and finding other sources of work. So my kind of, the way that I saw myself is, all right, I'm going to be like, I'll talk to anybody. I'll go out there and bang down doors. It doesn't bother me. Let me go out and try to like do that and try to get more work. And so I went to every single, whatever it was, Rotary Club, every single kind of different club and networking event and thing, and just wore myself out. And, it didn't do a whole lot except for me to kind of help me learn, you know, which were the things that actually were meaningful for the company and which things this is a good fit for us versus which things kind of aren't, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So then all of a sudden you're running it.
Yeah.
Talk about that so, transition.
My dad passed away, shortly after I joined the business, and I hadn't even seen a balance sheet or a P&L. I didn't even really know what any of the different financial, you know, documents were for the business. I've never done, you know, a year-end closeout or anything like that. And it was tough. It was like I wasn't great at whatever I was doing before he passed away. It was just like, and now I'm like, okay, great. Like, how am I going to figure this out, right? But I had a really good team. And I think, I know, you know, without the team that I had, I mean, there's no way, like, I don't know where the company would be today or where I'd be today, but man, it's like everybody just like, they were from the guys in the field to my leadership team. They were just so supportive. And, you know, it really does. It takes a whole team, right? It is not an individual effort, but interestingly enough, even though I was probably the least experienced person in the company, I still, for some reason, was making almost all the decisions. So I maybe didn't have the wisdom to defer when somebody asked me a question and say, what do you think we should do, right? Somebody would ask me a question and I was young enough.
Come up with an answer.
And maybe naive enough to think like, oh, they need me to tell them what to do. When maybe they just wanted to see how I was going to run the company, and maybe they thought, hey, this guy might want to make all these decisions, right? When it's like, no, I don't. I just don't. But if you ask me, I'll tell you. And it's, you know, with this kind of lens that I look at my experience now, I obviously would have never done things like that. But I was answering. I was telling everybody what to do all the time. If, you ask me what to do, I'll tell you what to do. When I have no idea or no place, you know, doing that. Did that for about a year, 90 hours a week of doing that. And it was it was pretty significant burnout. It was, yeah. And it wasn't scalable and it wasn't, yeah, it was tough. It was really frustrating and it was really stressful. And, it was kind of like a something had to give kind of moment for me, and went to a conference, and I met all these like really interesting entrepreneurs that were working on like amazing efforts that were future based and outside their company, amazing things like changing the world. And all the things that I was focused on were inside my company and reactive. So I had a conversation with a couple of them and I was like, what are you guys doing? And like, you guys are doing something that I'm not doing. Like, I need to learn what do I need to do here? And every single one of them was talking about this business operating system that they were running on. It's called EOS. So I was like, what is that? So I got the book, I read it. I'm like, holy crap, we need to do this. We did it. And then, you know, fast forward a couple years later and the company's basically running on its own and I'm able to focus on more of the things that like I'm uniquely good at. I'm not telling everybody what to do anymore. I think the interesting thing like with something like that was I almost needed that, I don't know, that prodding or that education on, oh wow, I can use some of the things that I knew about in the military on how to delegate and how to like, you know, let the guys kind of, or gals too, like run the things that they're good at and not having to be involved, right? Like, oh yeah, like it kind of took me back to some of the things that that I learned in the military. So this concept around like letting people run, hey, you've got it, you know how to do it, and I don't have the knowledge that you do about every single thing in this company, and even if I did, that wouldn't be scalable. So we implemented that in the business, and that really helped us out a lot. And then got to a point where it was kind of like, man, the business is largely, you know, for the most part, kind of running on its own.
You had these high quality people in place that were experienced and
fantastic people. Yes. And I finally figured out I need to get out of their way.
I think it was interesting. Nice. You said that like you had this great team around when you first took over, you had this team around you, and you, but before that you said that you guys were known for delivering good quality work. Yeah. And I think, was that a culture that you think was intentionally built or was demonstrated maybe by your dad as the leader and people kind of followed along? Like, do you know where that maybe came from?
And I think it was definitely that built that support system. Yeah, it was definitely intentional. And then my dad was a field guy. So he was like, hey, the work has to be high quality. He was also a subcontractor. So he knew that we've got to take care of our subcontractors or our trade partners. Because as a general contractor, you're not going to get anything done without the plumber and the electrician, right? It takes a whole team, right? A lot of the same themes here, right? But yeah, and I think that was always an emphasis for us. You know, we always told our trade partners that we want you guys to make money on the project. And that was a unique concept. Like a lot of those guys are like just used to like getting just beat up.
Cut, yeah.
Yeah. They're used to getting beat up by the GC, and we didn't want to be like that. And I think my dad instilled that in everybody in the company. And then when he passed away, one of the things that I do is I promoted one of our really good field guys to being like the head of all the field, because that was my biggest weakness. So I kind of thought to myself, all right, I can spend the next 30 years trying to get good at this. And then I'll be as good as he is right now, like, or like I could just have you do it because you're already great at it. And I don't, you know, I'm not good at this, and I can probably better serve the company by going out and bringing work in. So I think that was the focus. And then, I think something too, that when I think about the success of the company and I think about, you know, it really does all go back to compassion. And, I was doing a little bit of that at the time, but the more that I look back through my life, the times when I was successful were the times that I was compassionate, when I showed that I really cared. Not the times when I was cracking the whip and driving and go, right? Going back to like what we were talking about earlier about being a young coach, right? Young coaches, you know, they're all, was it piss and vinegar? Is that the...
That's a good description.
I think it's hard as like a very type A person,
right?
Having gone from the military to being like an entrepreneur, when you have that creative entrepreneurial mindset, mm-hmm. you're very much in control. You have the ideas, it's your idea, and so you own it. And then you come in and you hire people that you want to help run the business. And it's really hard to like let go mm-hmm. of that control. So I think that delegation and that like that learning of like my husband and I are opening a business and like I don't let him make any decisions, but yeah. it's us together. This is brand new. So like I just need to like release a little bit of control too. So I think that's was probably a transition for you as well, as you went from being, yeah, I have an answer for everything because I'm the person they're looking to, versus just letting the people who know what they're doing do what they're doing and continue that culture of support and compassion.
Do you know what the next level to that is?
Let's hear it.
Is letting go of the control of even having the idea. Because when you can do that, that's when the company really starts to flourish, or any organization, right?
Yep.
When the team members, and that's kind of where we're at now, when the team members are bringing the ideas, and I'm like, whoa, that's kind of scary, but yeah, let's try it. That sounds like that's when it starts to really like really go right. When,
I think you could very well expand way bigger that direction than just like what I have in my brain.
I think as entrepreneurs too, we often suffocate our teams in many ways, and that's one of them, right? Is like, there's this like, you know, entrepreneurs have a gazillion ideas and we just like, what about this and this and this and this and this? And the team's just like, holy crap.
Yeah, you expect
like,
everyone to be along for the ride.
They don't even have time to breathe an idea. They're just like reacting to all the stuff that we're throwing at them. So it's, that's definitely something that I struggle with too, right? Yeah. Is like, hey, I've got this idea. Like, let's go. We're going to do this. And it's like a little bit of pushback and you see it as, like a personal flaw, right? It's like they're attacking me, and it's not me, it's the idea, right? It's for the greater good. They're not saying it because they're lazy or because they don't want to do it or because it's a bad idea. They're saying it maybe because it is a bad idea, but it's, hey, there's a better way to do this, or a better time
in
to
support
this,
of the progress. Yep.
We're in Iraq on a mission, and like so embarrassed, like looking back at the story with, you know, we talked about how like it takes experience to kind of look back and learn and to understand things, right? Looking back on this mission, we had this mission, we planned it to a T. I planned it to a T. It was like the perfect plan. It was an air assault. We were trying to find, it was a dust one, destination unknown, whereabouts unknown. It was a US soldier who had been kidnapped in a previous deployment. We figured the guy was probably gone. We figured he was probably dead, but we were trying to find, at least recover his remains or find him. Anyway, so we planned this mission. It was a huge like battalion level mission. So it was like battalion, you've got a battalion, a company, and then you've got the platoons, right? So I was in one of the platoons and I did kind of our plan. It was air assault. So we were going in helicopters. I did the plan. We had a terrain model. So we like make up, hey, what do the houses look like? Where are all the things? Where are we going to land? Where are we going to go? And it was like the perfect plan. It was like the textbook, like, oh man, this is like something they would teach in one of the classes. Like, this is going to be amazing, right? And this is my plan. And I'm like, I crushed this. We get on the birds and we land. And as soon as we land, the ramp comes down and it's night and we've got our night vision on, but there's no moon. So you can't see anything. It's just like green and it's just like dark. You just can't see anything. We go off the ramp and I go first into a pit, and then like all of the other 40 guys like land on top of me. Like, and it didn't get better. It was like the worst mission ever. We start executing the mission and my guys are like, oh, we're not going to do that. We're going to do it. We're not going to do it the way that you said it. We're going to do it this way. And I was like, no,
it's like gut punch. After
that's
gut
my
punch,
plan.
Yeah.
But it took me 20 years to like look back and figure this out. They didn't care. It wasn't because it was my plan. It wasn't because it was me. It was because of the terrain. Like, they were wanting the terrain to dictate the plan.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, it was all about my ego.
Follow the steps. Yeah.
Like, no, look at me. Like, I made this plan and we're going to follow it. And they're like, no, we're not. Like, we need to do it
because the plans have changed.
That building's not here and this is the high ground and we're not going to be bringing machine guns over here. And like, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I can't believe this. And it was like a huge, huge gut check. But yeah, so I think having that maturity to like, and the other thing too, is like having the wisdom and maturity to bring the team in on the plan, right? Being able to be flexible and say, this might not be the best idea ever. What do you guys think? Not, this is the idea, we're doing this. Like, you do this, let's keep going. Like, it's more about like, let's get that buy-in, right?
Humility and trust.
And it starts with compassion, right?
Yeah.
If we've got the relationship, right? already formed, and we have, and we've established, hey, this person trusts me and I trust them, and I'm out for them for the best that they can possibly be. I'm not in it for myself. Like, I care about them. It's just the foundation for all that other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a heck of a story.
Yeah, that was a really cool story.
Thank you. It's in the book.
Nice. nice.
Book plug.
Nice. Yeah. The cover dropped today.
Plug the book all you want.
Yeah, you can take that book plug part out too.
No, yeah, I'll leave the book plug.
It's kind of cheesy.
Listeners, I'm down. Oh, I mean, no, if you don't, no. I'll take it out if you want me to, but we're all here for plugs. We're good. Yeah.
So you mentioned the EOS work, which you also...
What does EOS stand for?
Entrepreneurial Operating System. Okay.
Nice. Oh, I know. I
knew that.
I know. That's good.
The screen.
I even bought the book. What the heck is EOS?
Yeah, I could have given you a copy.
Oh, well, I bought it for, I don't know, a while ago. I know.
I wanted to ask you, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
How do you read so much?
Oh, like, my God.
I have, every time I bring up a book, you've read it.
Every time.
Pretty obscure books too. The About Facebook, that was like, I'm like, no way he's read this. Like, yep, I've read it.
I've had to tell him like 2 years ago, we were having lunch and he's throwing around book names. Have you heard of that book? Have you read that one? Have you heard this author? And I'm like, just so you know, pretty much the answer is always no.
Like, I feel like with him,
as much
yes.
as he delivers, it's like, no, yeah. no, no. I mean, great that he knows. Sorry, answer the question, but it's wild.
I love reading. So like when I was a kid,
I love reading.
When I was a kid, I read sports books and or books like read all the Tarzan and Conan novels, you know, like before I was 10. And then I don't know, once I got a little older, for a while there, I studied like weightlifting training stuff and I just read like crazy on all of that. But then as you know, grow up a little bit, I am curious, so I like learning, and then just to be good at what I do, you know, in terms of coaching or whatever, I want to know stuff, and I don't ever want to get a question that I can't answer, because I'm there to help them, and I don't want to constantly be saying, let me get back to you on that, so yeah, I read a lot.
You always say too, it's like, anyone who's successful, and what I think is really interesting about him is that he doesn't just study athletes and coaches. It's like anyone who was good at anything, could be a female gymnast or a, you know, violinist or like anyone who's good at anything and successful in their craft, like he wants to learn from them, which I think is like the curiosity was, I know we talked about that a few weeks ago, but yeah, I'm always like, how do you...
Do you have like a list? Do you have like a process with it? Is it like you get a book and you finish it right away and you just get another book?
I'm reading.
Do you have a stack that like these are the ones I want to read?
Yeah, I have. Well, one, I have a lot of books.
You won't loan them to you, by the way, either. Don't ask for borrow a copy.
Okay. Noted.
I'm really picky. I like my books to be in good shape. So all my notes for my books are in my phone.
Okay.
Like I just put it, like bang, the author and the title. And then I just, as I'm reading, I'll type notes in there or speak notes in there.
He also puts protective covers on all his books.
Really?
If I fancy looking. I like them. The aesthetics of a book are really does it for me. Like, so yeah.
Interesting.
I might title the episode.
Some of them are really beautiful books. And
yeah, that's true.
So not every book, but a lot of books.
Well, as you know, as an author now, like appreciation for all everything that goes into it. You're talking about the cover of your book today. It's like, I think the aesthetic of a book is something that we maybe, you know, it's like, don't judge a book by its cover and all these things. But the reality is it's like the amount of time and effort that goes into, from like how we bind it to the cover, to the back cover, to the prologue, to like everything matters. And so
it's funny how like I released the cover today, and when we were
like public.
Yeah. When we were doing cover selections, it was like, oh, don't worry about it. It's just the cover. And it's like, yeah, like everybody judges a book by its cover, right? That's what you
There's no escaping it.
Yeah.
No.
So
you can't do it. It's funny when you have a book that's got a title where it's like, okay, I pretty much know what that's about, right? Like setting effective boundaries or whatever. Do you have like a favorite book title that you've seen that's like, this is my favorite?
I don't know if I could, like from fiction, you know, I could probably say the Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. books. But then nonfiction, oh man, there's zillions of them. History and mm-hmm. whatever. I'm all over the place. Yeah. So
you'd have to pick the genre and pick the.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I like The Undaunted Courage, the book Stephen Ambrose wrote about Lewis and Clark. That's a heck of a title.
Okay.
Undaunted Courage.
Yeah. I haven't read that.
It's kind of like Unbound Performance.
Right. Yeah. That's a good leap.
Nice plug.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I've probably thousands of books at home. Huh? So, yeah. But yeah, I'm old, been around, so had time to read. But so the move into like the EOS coaching, like, mm-hmm. talk about how that happened.
Yeah, we got to a point where we were just, things were going really well in the construction company, and I'm like really good at putting out fires. Like, I love it. I love putting out fires. I'm so good at it that if there isn't one, I will make
You'll
one.
Make one.
So that way I have something to do, right?
Nice.
So that was a big part of it.
We have a lot in common.
That was a very big part of it. And it was like, things are going so well, like, oh, let me throw a hand grenade in this person's office and then like try to help them diffuse it, right? So yeah, that was part of it. The other part of it too was, you know, one of the things that happens as we get more freedom is like, all right, what am I going to do with this, right? Like, what do I want my life to be about? And the more that I thought about it, the more that I thought about, you know, my dad, he died at 61. 61 years old, and the more that I think about him, the more that, like, I come to understand that there wasn't this, like, he didn't have a system in his business to, like, let it just go on its own. Hmm. He had to make all of the decisions, right? Which is part of the reason why all the guys were asking me all the questions, right?
Because that's what...
That's he always kind of told us what to do, right? So my point is that, you know, when I got to the point where I got a little bit more freedom, I wanted to prevent what happened to my dad from happening to other entrepreneurs. Because the more that I kind of looked around and saw, like, you know, especially in the trades, right, where, you know, you get pretty good at something, you get to the point where you start hiring people, and then companies have this way of like taking over your life,
mm-hmm.
Unless you set those boundaries and say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to set it up and I'm going to make it work like a company. I'm going to make it work for me, not the other way around. So I wanted to help other entrepreneurs to not have that and not, you know, die as young as my dad. And I just really always loved to like the soft leadership skills. I really always like gravitated towards that stuff. So that's kind of the genesis of it. And that was a couple years ago. I've really enjoyed being a coach. It's just, I mean, to see, you know, to teach somebody something and then to coach them through it and then to see them kind of get to that next level. It's just, I mean, you guys know it's pretty special.
Well, that's, I know I'm a big meaning purpose guy. So yeah. That's like provides a lot of that, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Did a shift of to the EOS stuff in your business life also make some changes in your personal life?
Yeah, I think, you know, becoming a coach, a good coach is very self-aware and very growth oriented, right?
Yep.
Like, we've got to constantly look at like, ooh, that conversation didn't go the way that maybe I thought it would. Like, what, all right, was that them or was a little bit of that me? Like, how could I have shown up differently, right? And what work can I do to be my best self? And yeah, it totally does too, because, you know, as a coach, we've got to listen to understand too. And I think oftentimes as an entrepreneur, I'm ashamed to say, like, I would listen just to kind of like wait until it's like, all right, you done yet? Like, yeah, I'm about to tell you what it is, right? And so not only has, you know, becoming a coach changed me, I think personally, but it's also changed me as a leader. I'm a lot, hopefully a lot more aware and a lot more, I think, interested too, like genuinely curious about, you know, when I'm talking to somebody, it's like, okay, this is, I'm not just waiting for my turn to tell you what to do. Like, I'm actually like listening, because, you know, their idea, my dad had this story. He went out to a job site, and I can't remember the specific example, but the superintendent at the job site had an issue. And my dad asked him, he's like, what are you thinking about doing about it? Like, what are you going to do with that issue? And he described this like crazy plan that he was going to do. And my dad said, all right, sounds good. And he walked away. And one of the other guys with us asked him, he said, Mike, why didn't you tell that guy that that's stupid, that that's not going to work, that's whatever. And my dad said, if that guy has his own plan that he can execute, he will do it 10 times better than whatever I tell him to do, no matter if it's the best solution in the world. And he'll appreciate me more if I'm not telling him what to do.
What a amazing huge,
just like, yeah, whoa.
Great wisdom.
Mic right drop, there. Right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's, well, one, it deals with ego and removing it. And just an awareness of human nature and what motivates people. And that's killing it right there. That's totally awesome.
Totally.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Takes people a long time to get to that point, usually.
Yes, it definitely does. I think not only does it take people a long time to get there, but all of these things that we talk about, like, right, like the leaving space for somebody else's idea, or the like, and which is almost the same kind of thing, right? The ego tends to get in the way, right? Just like how the business, an entrepreneurial company, tends to want to run the lives of the entrepreneur or entrepreneurs, right? Our ego is the same thing. It's like, ooh, you, I know this. Like, let me jump in there. And it's like, we have to constantly, like, it's not something you just, oh, I figured it out, and now I'm not, now I will never do that again. Like, it's a constant struggle, right?
Yeah.
To consistently apply those lessons and to be present and to really, like, and it goes back to compassion, right? When you really care for somebody, it's like, all right, this seems like our children too, right? Seems like a lesson that you are going to need to learn, unfortunately, on your own. And hardest thing that we've ever, as human beings, I think, have to do is to watch our kids fail. But sometimes we have to do it, and it's painful, but they'll learn the lesson better if we don't get involved. If we keep saving them, sometimes it's like, man, you know, we save a kid 30 times from something, and it's like, yeah, they never learned the, they never got it. They never got the lesson, because we...
Yes, we talked about that.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's, I know, I finally got around to reading this book, Good Business, by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote the Flow books. He came up with the term, you know, this is a while ago, but he wound up writing a book on business. And the whole point, like, foundationally is, you can even get in a flow in a business world. It starts with caring and your purpose and having a purpose that is really meaningful and kind of transcendent. Then it's easy to kind of lose yourself into this. And it's just, I don't know, that guy is brilliant, and that's a heck of a book.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because I had read all his, a lot of performance related flow books, and I hadn't read this. And a friend of mine, who she is a corporate executive, she's the one who said, "Have you read his book on business?" And I was like, "No." And I was like, "How did I miss this?" You know, I was really kicking myself. So I kept meaning to order it, and I finally got around to it. So, been reading that lately. It's great, great, great book. Nice. So, speaking of books, let's move into that. How do you wind up deciding to write a book?
Yeah. So, this is a sad story, right? So my brother died by suicide a couple years ago. It was interesting, because at the time, maybe we can cut that last part out. I don't want to leave with that, but, got to a point where I was doing the coaching thing, and things were going pretty good. It was really starting to click. And I think it's interesting in life. Like, I almost feel like as soon as for me at least, as soon as I start to figure it out, it's just like life just like drops it on you. And it's like, okay, I do not have it figured out. And that event for me was my brother's suicide. That really changed, it rocked my world, right? Going through that was something that, you don't wish, you hope nobody else ever has to go through it. It's say being a, once you lose somebody to suicide, you're called a suicide survivor. Not a club that, you know, you ever want to be a part of. But what do we do, right? We persevere and we kind of just keep going. It was hard. It was really hard. And I think when I think about my brother and I think about all of the maybe different options and different things that I can do now, because I can't do anything then, right? You can't go back in time. As a suicide survivor, you almost have to live in two like totally different worlds at the same time. So it's like there's this world where I know that there's nothing that I can do to change, you know, what happened to him. And I can wish things to be different, but that doesn't make it so. And at the same time, there's a world where I know that I can do something for the future and for other people. So kind of taking this experience and kind of trying to figure out what to do next, I kind of came up with, and I sat down and I reflected on, you know, my life. And I thought a lot about how, and this experience just totally changed. And we've talked about this a little bit, but our experience has changed the way that we see the events in our life, right? So this experience totally changed the way that I saw pretty much everything in my whole life. And when I looked back at my brother and this experience and something that I think that I can do to help in the future, to decrease suicide in the future, I think about this idea and I call it entrepreneurial compassion. And I think if my brother had more compassion in the workplace, I think maybe he might still be here.
If he had received more compassion.
Yeah. If he had a more compassionate environment, I think he maybe could still be here. Maybe not. But the goal of the book and the project is really, it's all proceeds go to charity. So all proceeds go to, you know, suicide prevention efforts. And the goal is to create more compassionate environments, starting kind of with the entrepreneur or with the leader and the leadership team, and then kind of going down, right? I think as entrepreneurs, we underestimate the impact that we have on other people's lives, right? And we spend so much time at work that not only is it important that that's a safe space and that's a compassionate place where we're cared for, but the benefits are just like massive. I mean, the benefit to the employee or to the team member that's a part of that organization, the benefit to the entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs are at a high risk for suicide, right? My brother was a veteran. Veterans are at a huge, very high risk for suicide. So are entrepreneurs. And then what I found, though, I think one of the interesting things too is that not only does this kind of compassionate environment create better health outcomes for the employees, but also the entrepreneur, but also companies, organizations that where the leadership are more compassionate, they get more done, they accomplish more goals, and they're more profitable than their non-compassionate counterparts. So that's kind of long answer to the question. That's kind of what where the book kind of comes from and what I want to do with it. My goal is I want to create a million compassionate companies by 2035. And I think if I can do that, I think this work can save 100,000 lives. So that way my brother's death wasn't in vain. And I think, you know, I think most of us learn the lesson when things are the hardest, right? When we have that big loss or that big failure, that's when the lesson is fresh and that's when we can learn it. So what I want to do is, I've learned this lesson the hard way, and I've learned and started to understand this concept through the hardest experience possible. I want other people to learn it without having to go through what I went through. And I want to prevent it from happening, ideally as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So,
what kind of system would you use to go about creating those kinds of businesses
yeah.
or helping businesses become that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it has to start here, right? We've got to put our own mask on first, right? You and I have talked about this before. The level of kind of self-respect, right, is kind of the foundation for all of this work. Like respecting our own selves, right? Our own self. Because we can't love and be compassionate and care about other people if we don't respect ourselves. Right. So self-respect is really the core and the foundation of all of this work. And then self-compassion, right? We can have self-compassion after that. And then we can start thinking about others and caring for others. But, you know, it reminds me of, you know, we've got, you think about like the guy who's like a super nice guy, but you know, who like cares about everybody, but he's not taking care of himself. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh man, do you really care about everybody else? Like if you don't care about yourself enough to be around for those people, like how much do you really care about them? Like we've got to truly, really take care of ourselves and do the meditating and do the journaling. And what I've done is I've kind of developed some exercises that everybody can do. It's not revolutionary. It's kind of taking a bunch of stuff that's already been created, but thinking about, you know, meditating and keeping track of things and like certain things that we can do in the workplace and in our professional lives, just to show up and to be a little bit more compassionate, right? Because it takes practice. But the good news is that doing a little bit is way better than just doing nothing, right? It's like we don't have to try to be perfect at it. We just have to try.
Yeah. No, that was heavy, but that's a beautiful way to go about it.
Thank you.
Very.
How will you define those compassionate businesses as far as that, you know, if I can take a million of those businesses and turn them, are you going to literally create a list or is this just hopeful?
Oh, how am I going to track it?
Yeah. Are you hopeful to reach that many or are you going to like keep a tracking list of like when I hit this, you know, I want to hit this number by 2035.
That's a good
quantitative goal.
Yeah. That's a good question. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a way to do like people who have signed up for the newsletters that are running companies. And I'll probably like cross reference that.
Yeah. Two right here.
Yeah. Perfect. That's two. Great. Thank you. See, I'm already underway.
Look at you.
I think there's probably like a formula with like number of books sold and like, all right, what percentage of those do I think were people that are like leaders in the community, right? Sure. I think the other thing too for me is like, you know, getting responses from people of like, hey, I picked up your book.
Gotcha. Yep.
Or my boss read your book and wow, like, thank you. I think all of that stuff combined will probably tell me. I'll probably never really know like for sure, but I think that'll give me a pretty good indication as to what that number is. So, yeah.
A big old spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
That's really cool. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's I really admire that whole
thank you
thing. Great respect for that. That's
appreciate it.
Trying not to get a little weepy here.
Just end it with everybody crying. I know. Just hang up. End of call.
I'm not crying.
I got something in my eye, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not crying.
It's dusty in here.
Yeah, my contacts, except I don't wear them.
Right.
It's weird.
But wow, that's well, that's very meaningful.
Thank you.
I feel like this is not the last conversation we'll have with Cal on this podcast.
I hope not. I really hope not.
Yeah,
I
really appreciate it.
I thought the whole thing was, I was riveted.
Thank you.
Do you think you will ever write another book?
Oh, jeez, I don't know.
Let him get the first one out.
I know. That's
Yeah, was that process like?
Was it so grinding that it's like, I don't know if I want to do this again, or it's like, I can see myself doing it again?
I think I've never written a book before. I do think this is probably one of the hardest things I could have ever written about, though. It was it was a lot, man. I'm kind of a, you know, wear my heart on my sleeve kind of guy, you know, obviously. But even for me, it's like, that's a lot to put out there, right? And it's a lot to, just a lot to process. So I don't know, maybe one day, but I think it's like, let's get this first one out and let's kind of see. But I think for now it's, you know, really centered around this mission and seeing where this goes. And, but yeah. Probably not, honestly.
No, I didn't mean to imply like I was trying to guilt you into writing another one at all.
I didn't take it
that way. I always say to her, like, James Clear, all he did was write one book. Sold like 15 million copies of it. Hadn't written another one. So
I think it's so purposeful. Like, you hear a lot of people saying, I want to tell my story and I hope that it reaches somebody. Like, if one person hears my story, that's enough for me.
Yeah.
And you're going beyond that of, I'm going to tell my story. There's clear goals for the reader in mind that they're going to be able to move on with after that. And I have this measurable, attainable goal that I want to achieve. It's like, it got very clear and defined purpose that I think is a little bit different than just, I want to tell my story and I hope people like it. Right. Yeah.
Well, and that's, I mean, the reason for writing it is so heavy and powerful that, you know, that's, it's not like, all right, I got to crank out a novel every year. There's a whole different writing experience for sure. But I tremendous admiration for you taking it on and for it. And, just the way you do everything. Like, every time I ever tell somebody that I've talked with you or something, I just say that dude is hot.
Thanks, man.
Shit. And
I could probably find a text thread where he said that.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate it.
So I'm so happy you were here.
This was a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, you guys made it easy, and I really appreciate it. Very grateful for you guys and to be here.
We'll do all we can to promote the book.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my one ask, if I may. I would love it if you guys and any of the listeners or viewers would go and sign up for giving away some free chapters and stuff like that. It's going to be through the newsletter.
Yep.
We could probably put it in the thread stuff.
Absolutely. Yep.
CalRiley.com.
Awesome. Do it now.
That'd be great.
Newsletter sign up right here.
Yep. Newsletter's at the bottom. And awesome. Sign up. And, yeah.
Done.
That'd be great. So.
Definitely.
And this book will be out.
It's going to be out for Suicide Awareness and Prevention Month in September. So that's the goal. Launching it in conjunction with Stop Soldier Suicide. So they're a 501c3 who's trying to, I think their mission is to decrease veteran suicide by 35% or something like that. So I'm working with them as well. All the profits are going to go to them and to their efforts and stuff. So
amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well, that is a grand noble cause, my friend. We're awesome to hear about, and we're honored to have a little part in it for sure.
Thank you guys.
You're the man.
Thank you.
Good deal.
My pleasure to be here.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Unbound Performance Podcast.
Your support helps us continue to build our community. If you're enjoying this content, please like, subscribe, and share.